This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Nate Milton.
Yes! That boy's good!
And Marcus Vandenberg.
Let's say!
So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings. Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the program that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports show, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic podcast produced and hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major network. I'm the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by my partner in crime and the man that is cooler than a polar bear's toenails after taking the ice bucket challenge, Marcus Vandenberg. What's going on, brother?
What's up, Nate? How you doing?
I am doing great, man. Had an interesting week back at work, coming off of my birthday. Been some interesting stories in the news, which I'm sure we'll get to. But I want to know how you're doing. There was a big event in your neck of the woods over the weekend. Were you in the house?
I was not in the house for SummerSlam. I did not go this year. Went the last 2 years. Three years, I think. And I had to work, and I could have asked off, but I wasn't really up to going to another SummerSlam, to be honest. So
tell the truth, were you protesting because there was no party this year?
No. I did go to two of the panels. I went to the Hulk Hogan panel on Friday night, which was interesting. And I went to the 2K 15 roster reveal on Saturday, which is also interesting and a bit of a letdown because they didn't announce the whole roster. I was like, why am I here if they're only doing a deep part of the roster? So, but yeah.
How was that man called Sting?
Sting was good. You know, he said multiple times on multiple occasions that he wants to wrestle. He wants to wrestle Taker, but if he doesn't get Taker, he still wants one last match, and he wants one match in WWE. So, he sort of danced. I mean, it sounds like, you know, he doesn't have a contract yet, but if it's up to him, he would wrestle. And, you know, ultimately that decision comes down to, you know, Vince and Triple H, but he's game for another match. So Friday night was Hogan, and, yeah, the lower section wasn't full. And that was like the VIP people, and, you know, people were paying good money to get their photo taken with Hulk Hogan after the event. And then the top section looked pretty empty as well. So yeah, Hogan was not a draw, which was surprising because it's still Hulk Hogan. And he was pretty open. He was telling a lot of stories, you know, throughout his career. He touched on Warrior. He touched on Savage. He told a great Randy Savage story about Savage and Miss Elizabeth. And I guess he sort of explained why they had a falling out, and it had to do over Miss Elizabeth. I guess Hogan went down to Miami to shoot a movie, and Miss Elizabeth, Savage, Hogan, and Hogan's wife at the time were all close, and Hogan invited Miss Elizabeth down if she wanted to come hang out in Miami with Hogan's wife. So I guess Elizabeth took him up on the offer and came down, and Hogan noticed that Elizabeth came alone, and she was spending time with all this her free time with this dude. And Hogan noticed, and Hogan talked to his wife and said, you know, what do I do? Like, I had to tell Randy about this. And somehow it got back. Randy found out, I guess before Hogan had a chance to tell him. And Hogan said he was in the shower one day before going to work to shoot the film. And he comes out the shower, and Randy's in the room, and Randy is got a finger in Holt's wife, and pretty Whoa. Much on top of her, saying, "Where's Miss Elizabeth?" And Hogan was like, "Yo, Randy, you know, chill." And Hogan at the time knew where Elizabeth was, and so Hogan took Randy over to Miss Elizabeth's room, and Randy went in, and Hogan said he took off. He said, I was out of there. I didn't want to be around for what was going to happen. And Hogan eventually said that later on, a bunch of cops showed up, and he never knew what happened exactly between the two of them. But the police were called, and from that point on, Randy wasn't a fan of Hogan. And Hogan's whole thing was, well, I was going to tell you, I just didn't know how to tell you, and blah, 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 blah. But, yeah, he basically said that Hogan was really, you know, protective of Miss Elizabeth to the point where it was a bit psychotic and crazy. And, you know, eventually they, how they made up was Hogan was going in for a back surgery. He was at the doctor getting his back looked at, and Savage happened to be at the same doctor, and he came in one day, and this was after Hogan remarried to his new wife. And you know, Hogan was like, yo, Randy, what's going on? And, you know, Randy, you know, apologized for not speaking to him and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it was this whole weird dynamic between the two of them, and it all had to do with Miss Elizabeth and, you know, sort of the way he was protective of her. So it was interesting, interesting session, and I'm kind of surprised they didn't tape it for the network, because I thought it would be something that would be good for the network, or actually they should be taping all this stuff and showing it live, but, you know, I'm not sure why that was.
And does Hulk Hogan know how lucky he is? That could have ended off so badly. Yeah. Dropping Macho Man Randy Savage off at Elizabeth's house, pissed off.
No, hotel room.
At the hotel.
Yeah, he sort of ratted
that could
on
have been,
Elizabeth.
That,
yeah.
That could have been an OJ situation, bro.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Not to mention, Hulk just kind of glossed over. Hey, Macho Man was had his finger all up in your wife, man.
Yeah, that's fighting time. But
and that's how Hogan got the idea. Whoa, you can mess with other people's wives? Let me give Bubba a call.
And there was no questions about that whole situation.
Oh man, one last Hogan thing before we get to SummerSlam. Did you see the I don't know if it was a tweet or Instagram from Mrs. Warrior?
Yeah, so I actually read about the statement she wrote or she put out while I was at the panel, and I debated about raising my hand and asking him a question about it, but I figured he hadn't had a chance to read it and I didn't want to, you know, ambush him. But yeah, I guess it stemmed from the Grantland interview he did with Rosenberg and Shoemaker. And I think it was about, I forgot what Hogan said, but basically, her whole thing was Hogan hasn't sent a card, visited, nothing since Warrior's death.
Hmm.
And he did discuss Warrior, and he told the story about how he had a chance to see Warrior, and that was captured in the documentary that they shot. And, you know, I just, he said the WWE told him not to approach Warrior during the weekend because they didn't want to stress him out. And, you know, he said he was glad that he got to at least see him before he passed. And, you know, with Hogan, it's really hard to believe some of the stuff he says. So it's sort of like you got to take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, it was interesting 2 hours.
Yeah, things are never quite so cut and dry when it comes to one Terry Bollea.
Yeah, and he had nothing to say about Dixie Carter. He said he would never have anything negative to say about Dixie Carter, but he said he was happy to not be in TNA, essentially, which I think everyone would be happy not to be in TNA at this point. But yeah, he didn't really trash TNA. He, you know, explained why he went there and what his goals were going in, and that pretty much everything he was promised going in never happened. So he sort of felt like he was sort of handcuffed. And plus, he said he got there thinking he was going to be more active in the ring, and that's when his back started acting up. So he was sort of handicapped there in terms of what he could do in the ring. So he just said it didn't really work out, but nothing bad to say about Ditzy.
Yeah, to be fair, that would have been a bad look if he had badmouthed TNA.
Yeah.
It's like, what? The bank robber doesn't badmouth the bank with lack of security.
Yeah.
Like, man, you got broke off.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't care what they promised or what they said they was going to do and didn't do. you got paid way more than you should have. And like, yeah, the bank robber doesn't complain about lack of security. And man, that's the worst bank I ever robbed. They didn't have no pins or nothing.
Yeah, he was a ski masked all star for TNA. He stole their money. So,
oh man, yeah.
And since we're talking Hogan, cheap plug. Check out Yahoo Sports. I talked to Hogan last week, and the interview is posted, so you can find it still. So yeah, he was a cool guy. He wasn't bad at all.
Okay. All right, Terry. Tell the truth, Terry. but there was one man who was the truth at SummerSlam, and we'll talk about that real quick. And of course, he is the one behind the one in 21-1, the man that eats, sleeps, suplexes, and repeats. Brock Lesnar with a beat him down situation, as Bomani Jones would say, over John Cena at SummerSlam to cap off one of the better WWE pay-per-views I've seen in a while. What did you think, Marcus? Did you regret not going to the show? And what did you think of the main event?
I did regret not going only to see the main event. I would like to see that in person. That was a great main event. I thought it was probably on par, if not better, than WrestleMania. A really solid show from top to bottom. Which was surprising because leading up to it, they did a great job with Cena and Lesnar, but the rest of it was sort of hit and miss. But they delivered, which I was surprised and happy to see that, and they delivered the next night on Raw. But yeah, with the Lesnar match, I actually thought Cena got too much offense in. I would have liked to see Lesnar have dominated even more, and I really thought they were going to do the twit pin after the F5. I thought, oh boy, they're going to do this in a minute. But of course, Cena kicked out. But yeah, it really got the point across that Brock Lesnar is this world beater, and he can't be stopped at the moment. And props to John Cena for taking that beating, because there are a lot of guys in that roster who would have Triple H was going to take a beating like that. Come on, there's a lot of guys who have egos in that locker room that probably wouldn't have said who signed off on that. And that's just the kind of dude John Cena is, and I think Paul Heyman got that point across on Monday night when he was talking about Cena sort of being the man for the last 10 years compared to the likes of Austin and Rock. So, and even Hogan. I mean, Hogan's run was 10 years long or on top. I mean, he sort of faded after losing the Warriors. So, yeah, it was really impressive. What'd you think?
I thought it was really cool. I think, in terms of John Cena, at this point it's an uphill battle to get the internet fan or the quote-unquote smart fan to get this dude any type of props. But I think between the match and Paul Heyman's promo the next night, they built him up as best they could. I think, you talk about guys in his spot, in his position, who would have been that generous with Brock. Like, I don't see Austin doing that. I don't see Hogan doing that. Mm-mm. Rock maybe, but probably not.
Mm-mm.
A Triple H, no. It's very rare that you get a guy in that spot that's going to be like, okay, yeah, you can come in and basically, whoop me like a rented mule, stomp a mud hole in me, and walk it dry, and I get, a little bit of hope spots here and there, so a little bit of offense put in, but for the most part, you just beat me down, for the majority of this main event, and
as
I really
champion.
Enjoyed
yeah.
it. Right, as the champ. And we've never really seen a match booked like this in terms of a main event for a pay-per-view, a championship match. And I think somebody on Facebook mocked up the Death of Superman cover, the old comic book, and they mocked it up like John Cena, the Death of Super Cena. And I thought that was a really cool analogy, because I think what has hurt John Cena over the past 10 years is he has been Superman. And unlike the comics, there was never a period where he ran up against a challenge where it was serious, where he was out for an extended period of time. Now, granted, he's going to be back at Night of Champions, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I think that the Lesnar threat, doomsday in this analogy, I know Marcus is lost because he's not about that comic book life.
Nope.
But, you need that big villain to make the hero better, and I think the problem with Cena for the better part of 10 years is he was always, win, lose, or draw, he came back the next night and he was smiling. Well, no smiles on Monday this week.
Yeah, no Cena at all.
Right, no Cena at all. And I think that was really good. And Brock is an interesting champion. I think there's a bit of a problem, and maybe it's a good problem to have, in that I don't see anybody right now on the roster, as things are currently constituted, that is a believable or credible threat. I think Reigns has potential, but he's not ready yet. Anybody else, I really don't see being a believable threat to this guy, and I think it's a good problem to have, I think, but it's also going to take some creative booking in order to, you know, build up a guy that the fans can buy into to go against this beast.
Yeah, I'm not buying Reigns yet for WrestleMania, and I wonder if they do.
You saying you don't believe that?
No, and I guess, you know, in a perfect world, Plan B would be The Rock if they could toss enough money at him. But even still, I mean, if you have The Rock come in, I wouldn't expect The Rock to beat Brock, and then what? Because he
have and Rock's not Rock's not taking that ass whooping either.
Yeah, that too. So, I mean, I had to see The Rock losing, but he's not going to lose like that. So,
no.
Yeah, I think it all depends on Lesnar's plans for the company after WrestleMania. If he's going to stick around, then maybe you don't do the title switch at WrestleMania. Maybe you keep it on Brock. But if he's going to leave, then I think you have to take the title off of him somehow, some way. So I think that will dictate what kind of opponent we get for WrestleMania, whether he decides to stay. But I don't see why he would leave. I mean, he's making good money. He's doing easy work. He's, you know, the champ now. So, unless he wants to have one last UFC run, that's the only way I could see him leaving. And he would have to do that sooner than later because he's getting up there in age. So,
yeah.
I don't see anyone really stepping up to play at the moment. Batista has been tossed around. And I think even the WWE has hinted, they posted some photo with Batista and Lesnar back from, I think, OVW. So I think that's the direction they'll probably go for the Rumble. But in the meantime, I think he'll beat Cena again, and we probably won't see him on TV until maybe Survivor Series at the earliest.
Yeah, I think Batista and Brock would be interesting, especially coming off of the almost universal praise dudes received off of Guardians of the Galaxy. That'd be an interesting fit. In a perfect world, Daniel Bryan would be the guy that would come back from injury and, you know, overcome all this stuff that's been thrown in his way and beat a guy twice his size. You got the David and Goliath story, but that's not going to happen. I think eventually it is Roman Reigns, and I just don't know. I just don't know if he's ready. But they pulled the trigger on guys quicker than Reigns, so we'll see. I think that Lesnar, it's very interesting because you've got the one argument where you need your champion on every big show. But then, you know, back in the day, that wasn't how they did it at all. You know, it was very rare to see your champion, and it was even rare to see them defend it. And I think if you want to put some more prestige or stock or build the title back up, that brand spanking new title they unveiled on Monday night, if you want to, you know, build that thing up, then maybe, you know, you just have Brock defend it, you know, once or twice between now and, I guess between now, we got Night of Champions.
We got Hell in a Cell, which I might be attending.
And Dallas. Then we got.
Yeah.
So then we got, what's after that? Rumble?
No, you got Hell in a Cell, Survivor Series, TLC,
yes, yes.
And then Rumble.
Okay, yeah. So I'd have him defended at Night of Champions, and I'd have him defended at the Rumble, so you get that image where, you know, the champion comes out at the end and stares down the Rumble winner. And that'd be it.
That's a big gap, though. That's 3 months. With no champion.
I mean, there's ways to keep him around, though. You know, I think with Paul Heyman, you've got the best mouthpiece in the business. You've got a way to keep him relevant. You've got a way to keep him around. He can do pre-taped segments. I think there's a way to they've got to be smart with it, absolutely, but
that's
I think
a
there's a
time.
Way to
I mean when you look at the pay-per-views, your pay-per-views are structured to your main event 99% of the time is a title match, is usually, you know, WWE title. So even just from, like, what would you even put in that spot to
More matches for Dolph Ziggler.
Close out a show, I mean.
The IC title.
I wouldn't mind that, but I don't think that's going to, you know, sell the network. That's the thing. I think the easy month, I mean, easy match 1 month is to unify those titles, the IC title and the United States Championship.
Yeah.
I mean, that could headline a pay-per-view. And especially if they're doing Sheamus and Cesaro, and they can get Sheamus out the picture somehow and have Cesaro and Ziggler, that'd be a fun match.
That would, and I mean, there's other matchups, you know, if they gave a damn about the tag team division, because they've got a hell of a team with the titles right now, but there's nobody in that division that is interesting. They've completely killed.
Hey, Big Show, Mark Henry.
Yeah, we'll see how long that lasts. Them.
That was fun.
You know, is that going to last once Rusev kills Henry and gets back on his squashing the black dude's role?
Yeah.
And again, another week without the black faction.
Oh, that's done. Come on. You've seen the tweets, right? They're done.
Yes, they are done. So, yeah. John Murray had more faith in the WWE than I did when it came to that faction.
Yeah, that was short-lived. There was a tweet today. Let me find it real quick. Thanks for bearing with the absence of True Kofi, Xavier Woods, and I, the last two Raws, as we shoot Madea loses her tax refund in a dice game.
Like, yeah, this guy's so good, and they've got absolutely nothing for him.
Yeah.
It just popped into my head. The way that they had built Big E up going back, what, a year ago?
Yeah.
If they had continued on that path, that could be a program, him and Brock. A believable program. But no, they wasted that. Like, Biggie's a joke now. Nobody, you know, you could put him in there, but nobody would take him seriously.
Well, who has it worse? The black wrestlers or the Latino wrestlers in WWE? Because
Oh, yes.
They are in a happy bunch, too.
Hey, look, you want to talk about pipe bombs? My man Del Rio. I don't even know if we can call him Del Rio.
El Pipe Obama. Or however you say that in Spanish.
My man went ham. I had to get the transcript because I speak very little Spanish, even though I used to live in San Diego. But damn.
Yeah.
Talk about burnt bridges. Like, they probably weren't going to rehire him ever again, but he took a match to that bridge.
Even CM Punk was like, damn. even my bridge is still stable at the moment.
Like, never say never, but this nigga ain't never going back to the WWE.
Same with Rey Mysterio, too.
Yeah. Like, what was that? The ridiculous contract that they supposedly have with him. He can't compete in the United States for a year. Like, there's no way that can hold up.
Well, it sounded like it's only because he... Let me try to find that story. I think it has to do because he is not going to honor his 90-day non-compete. But I'm not buying it either. Let me see if I can find it. But yeah, Alberto Del Rio was at Triple Mania over the weekend in Mexico and basically cut a promo in Spanish that said, you know, he was facing racism in the WWE, and he did an interview the next day in Mexico, sort of explaining what happened. He admitted to slapping the dude and said it wasn't the first incident with the guy. There was an incident about 8 months ago with the same person, and it sounds like he was facing a hostile work environment, and he tried his best to deal with it, but eventually it got to him, and he just, you know, snapped and slapped the dude.
Yeah, here's a little bit of the promo in English. He said, of course it wasn't easy to live my dreams. And then came a day where the dream turned into a nightmare. I came across a monster called racism. And racism doesn't distinguish sex, race, religion, color. It doesn't care if you have money. It doesn't care if you don't have money. And then his father, Dos Caras, was in the ring with him. And he was like, you know, I love you, Dad. In the U.S., they may be able to take my job, but they'll never, ever take away my dignity and my pride. And I promise you, my fellow Mexicans, that never again will someone disrespect my people, myself, and all those that I love.
Yikes.
So, basically, you know, a big middle finger to the WWE and the culture up there, at least from his perception. And the other part, like you alluded to, is, you know, they are absolutely trying hard to get Ray out of his deal to come down to AAA. Conan even going so far as the Free Ray hashtag. And it's interesting. You know, we all expected a wrestling war, some of us, with TNA, some people with ROH. But the real war may be between the WWE and AAA.
Yeah, it's about to be a legal war in the courtrooms because Mysterio showed up at the show via video and tried a promo in Spanish. And at the very end, the hashtag Free Ray. Jeez. Yeah, this is going to get ugly. And if I'm the WWE, I leave these two alone. I don't try to go after them. I let them do whatever they want and move on because if you know, Mysterio stands with his contract and sort of being stuck there because he was injured, and with Del Rio, that's a whole other can of worms you don't really want to go into. So I would, you know, let them do what they want. If they want to compete in the United States, let them go, because that's something you don't want to deal with, especially after this whole Atlanta story about the black wrestlers. I mean, you know, Vicky left, Del Rio's gone, Mysterio wants out. You know, there's something going on with the Latino wrestlers as well, so it's not good.
Yeah, I mean, it's they may have the letter of the law on their side, but it's a case of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah.
Like, what do you really gain from it by keeping Ray for a few more months or by keeping Del Rio off of American TV? I think the PR image hit that they would take, and also, you know, just you want to entice different people to come work for you. You may want some Mexicans in the future to come work for you, and this isn't a good look if you're targeting two of the biggest stars to come out of Mexico.
Yeah, and also the original Sin Cara, he's another one's gone, but
yeah,
he had a bunch of issues as well. So yeah,
and that was actually the ending of Triple Mania, where Del Rio came out and saved Sin Cara from being jumped, and then, you know, you've already got the seeds for him and Rey and Sin Cara in this bizarro world faction of guys that have had problems with the WWE.
That's funny.
The LWO lives again.
All right. Just need Conan to be the manager.
I was going to say they need Conan and Chavo, and that's it right there.
Yeah, Chavo would do it.
Oh, that would be Triple A America. Like, I don't know when this thing is going to get off the ground or if we'll have access to it out here, but I'm actually intrigued now.
Yeah, I mean, it's with both those guys and cut Angel's promos, Del Rio and Mysterio, so yeah.
Like, you couldn't ask for two better guys to kind of fall into your lap.
Yeah.
If they're able to, you know, do that. And they have Ricardo Rodriguez in the fold, so it's like there's some stars that are recognizable to American fans, and, you know, it could be a boon to this promotion if they can get their stuff together.
Just keep Jeff Jarrett away. That's all I ask.
Hey, he's in the Bullet Club now.
Exactly. Keep him away.
Ain't he great? Oh, well, let's go from one man who may not be welcome in Mexico to a woman that may not be welcome in Los Angeles, even if she is the number one Clippers fan on the entire planet Earth, Marcus.
Yeah, Shelly Sterling, number one Clipper fan. Who knew? The Clipper sale is officially. Steve Ballmer went nuts at Staples Center on Monday and did his thing.
I know the Clippers fans are like, wow, we traded one crazy white man for another.
Pretty much.
By the way, a different type of crazy.
If you want to email Steve Ballmer, his email address, which he gave out at the rally, is sballmer@clippers.com. He's taking your emails currently.
Okay. Let's see if we can get him on the show.
Yeah, let's try. As I sit here on my Apple products. as part of the settlement, Shelley Stelling was officially named the number one Clipper fan, which, you know, as we all know, that's Clipper Darrell's title. He's the true number one Clipper fan. But I guess, you know, legally now, that's Shelley Stelling's title, and she gets, I think, 10 tickets to Clipper games, and she's had a bunch of demands that she got requested. So she will be still have a presence at Clipper games, which is going to be weird. Donald will not have a presence at all. He can still buy tickets, but I don't see why he would even A, spend money, because that's not what he does, and B, bother to show up at this point to Clipper games.
It'd be like the old wrestling gimmick where you thought somebody was banned, but they show up. I bought a ticket.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Shelley settlement is weird. Like, she gets all these little perks, you know, including if the Clippers win a championship in the future, she gets 3 championship rings.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, the bogus title of number one Clipper fan, which is an absolute joke and a slap in the face. Like, Clipper Darrell's taking this a lot better than I would.
Yeah, that's a direct shot at Clipper Darrell. I mean, why would she even request that?
Like, yeah, that's just it's very petty. And it doesn't surprise me that she would request that stuff, but it does surprise me that the Clippers would agree. And I guess it's just a function of we want to get this woman and this whole deal settled as quickly as possible, so we'll agree to your crazy demands.
Yeah, it's I hope she's on it every game, because she's just as bad as Donald. You know,
like, who's going to want to go to the Clippers games with Shelley Stelling and be a part of that? Like, she's not going to receive a warm welcome or a standing ovation in the Staples Center.
Yeah, I feel bad for the people sitting next to her. I'm sure that's going to be awkward, you know, sitting next to Shelley Stelling at Clipper games.
Like, she better find a whole lot of black people to take up those 10 tickets.
Yeah.
Because she's going to need all the help she can get.
Yeah,
like, yeah, this Shelley Stelling and her best friend Steve Harvey, Kevin Hart.
just a weird story, but I'm happy for the Clippers, Clipper fans that, you know, can move on now, and especially for Doc Rivers, who was sort of, you know, threatened to leave if Sterling wasn't removed in time before the start of next season. So it's still a Laker town, but the Clippers are still hands down the better team at the moment, so it'll be another interesting season out here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Doc Rivers deal and also, you know, Chris Paul and some of the other black players on the team were put in this uncomfortable position. So in one sense, it's ridiculous and stupid and ass a 9, ass a 10, ass a 11, to paraphrase Stephen A. Smith, that they gave her all these concessions, but In the grand scheme of things, it's over with. It's done. Donald Sterling is done. Steve Ballmer is in. And hopefully the Clippers can move on, because they're a team in a tough West that, you know, has an outside shot of making it to the finals.
Yeah, they I think they'll be up there this season again. I think they should you know, challenge for the Western Conference Finals with Oklahoma City and San Antonio. But they're heading in the right direction, you know. Assuming that Chris Paul can stay healthy, assuming Blake Griffin can get his back right, they'll be in good shape next season.
Yeah, I think they'll be all right. Real quick, let's go back to Clipper Darrell for a minute, because we've talked to CD on the program before. You can go back in the archives and check that out. If the Clippers win, isn't he now, like, officially a member of the Clippers organization, or did I read that wrong?
I know
they had that beef for a while,
and that was playing out Sterling.
And then they had like a reconciliation, but I don't know if they officially brought him into the fold. Because I want to know, if the Clippers win a title and Shelley Sterling gets 3 rings, the Clipper Dad don't get no rings. That's an injustice.
I'm pretty sure Steve Ballmer will make sure that Clipper Daryl gets taken care of.
Like, I don't hear Shelley Sterling in the stands saying, "Let's go, Clippers." But not, you're the number one fan.
Not yet. Maybe that'll be this year. It'll be a routine this year.
But if she does, she has to really enunciate, because Clippers and niggas sound real similar.
Yeah.
The Let's Go Niggas.
Clap, 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 man.
Like, no, I said Clippers, not Knickers. You didn't hear me correctly. what's going on in your town, Marcus?
Hey, at least from that Ferguson.
Yes, and that brings us to our final story this week. And something Marcus and I have talked a little bit about off of the air, but...
We've been trying to spare you the story, people, but...
Yeah, it's... The pot has boiled over, and, you know, we got to talk about what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri. And it's you can't watch any news or any of the news channels without being aware of what's going on. But for the folks out there that may still be in the dark or are, you know, are hardcore sports fans that don't really care about the news, let them know what we're talking
people.
About.
Yeah.
Your international listeners.
Yeah. So Ferguson. This was, 10 days ago now?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, 10 days ago now. So there was a shooting outside of St. Louis, Missouri, and involving a white officer in a 18-year-old. Was he 18?
Let me double check.
I know he's supposed to start college, but yeah, he was young black male, unarmed black male. And he was involved in a robbery, allegedly, and you know they released the video, and took off, and a cop spotted him, and the story that they're releasing now is that the Mike Brown approached the cop in the car, and allegedly punched the officer in the face. There was a scuffle between Mike Brown and the cop.
Yes, Michael Brown was 18.
Okay, yes. The cop eventually got control of his gun, and he ordered Mike Brown and the other young man that was with him to on the sidewalk and to basically surrender. And I guess the... let me find the details, but I think the two guys, Mike Brown and the other guy, took off, and one, I guess Mike Brown decided to bum rush the officer, and that is when the officer decided to shoot Michael Brown 6 times, including twice in the head, I believe, Officer Darren Wilson, and you know, that if that wasn't bad enough that he, you know, fired 6 times at him, killing him. He was unarmed, by the way. The body, his body, lay in the street for 4 hours after the fact. And why that's the case, we've had no answers about that. So naturally, the residents of Ferguson, which is a majority African American city that has a majority white police force, was upset about the incident, and this has sparked off a number of protests that have led to violence and altercations with the cop, which is now on a nightly basis at this point. It's been 10 nights now of essentially the same back and forth, where we have protests during the day, sun goes down, the cops decide to move in with, you know, essentially military type gear and procedure with tanks and tear gas and it's usually the same routine where there's a curfew called, you know, cops are ordering people off the street, protesters decide not to leave, and then all hell breaks loose. And it's been like this for every night now. So it's been interesting to watch this story, because at first the story wasn't being covered on CNN, MSNBC. People were getting information from Twitter, from people on the ground. And it wasn't until a couple of journalists who were arrested, including Wesley Lowry, who is a member of NABJ, was arrested. This was probably a week ago now. And after that point, the media decided to take the story more seriously and decided to actually send cameras and do live coverage from Ferguson. So it's been an interesting thing to play out. I don't think either side is has come off well in terms of the, I think the protesters are, there's a core group of protesters who are actually just protesting, and then like with any group, there's a group of knuckleheads who are out there just out there trying to cause harm and loot and do everything like that. And you know, the cops are definitely in the wrong in the way they're handling this, and I think the media has been sort of just in the way, I think, at this point, and sort of been instigators to both sides of the party. So what are your thoughts about the whole situation?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. So we just kind of go piece by piece. First of all, with the initial incident, you know, between Michael Brown and Officer Wilson. Man, you know, it's saddening. It's a shame. You know, it's the type of situation where whenever something like this happens, you get these differing opinions of the victim in this case, and it's either he's a saint or he's the worst demon ever. And that's rarely the case with human beings. You know, we're all good, we're all bad, and you know, we're on the spectrum somewhere. And you know, this kid, he was committing a crime, obviously. You know, he stole some cigars, which was a very stupid decision, and you know, young people will make stupid decisions.
And I should say that information didn't come out until later. So going in, yeah. I think we were all sort of under the impression, or at least I was hoping, that there wasn't a batch story involved. And unfortunately, there was a story involved, and there was information about him not only being involved in the robbery, but also at the time having marijuana in his system as well. So it's just been a combination of things that have been coming out now after the fact, sort of about his story and what exactly happened that day.
Yeah, and you know, it, like I said, it's, you know, there's good and bad in all of us, and, you know, it was a stupid decision for these two kids to, you know, go and rob this store. But at the end of the day, that still doesn't make it okay for this young boy to lose his life, for his parents to not have a son, for, you know, this guy that was enrolled in college to not have a chance to see what his life could have been. You talk about Ferguson and just the dynamics of that town. Just a couple quick statistics. You know, the town is over 60% black, but the police chief, the mayor, most of the city council is white. There's only one school board member that's black, and, you know, only three police officers on the entire Ferguson police force are black. So there's already the ingredients in place for hostility, for tension. And when this went down, like you said, at first it started as, you know, a trickle of information on Twitter mainly and other social media sites. After hearing about the initial incident, I didn't really hear a lot about it until, you know, us being kind of in this wrestling sphere, MVP, TNA wrestler, decided to go down there. What was it, Friday night?
Yeah, I think so.
He went down there Friday night, joined the protest, and posted a lot of really interesting pictures. And, you know, just like you said, most of these protesters, the majority of them are people that are outraged with what happened with Mike Brown and want to protest to make a positive change in the situation. But when you get coverage on the news, coverage in the media, that brings out the best of us and it brings out the worst of us. And there's people that don't even live in Ferguson coming from, you know, California, New York, Texas, and joining in with the knuckleheads that may already be in Ferguson and acting a damn fool.
I saw a stat today that 27% of the arrests, I don't know if it was from yesterday or from, I don't know what the time frame was, but 27% of the arrests were from people not in Missouri. So people from other states, a quarter of the arrests were people from who just happened to come in and protest or do whatever, who got arrested. So yeah, that's been a problem.
Yeah, and you know, they're giving the good protesters, for lack of a better term, a bad name, because you know, the peaceful protest is not what's going to lead the story. What's going to lead the story is some idiot throws a rock or a bottle at a cop, and then the cops in riot gear move in and shoot tear gas at people, and you have reporters getting arrested, you have old people getting arrested, you have, you know, people from out of state getting arrested, and that becomes the story, not what the protesters are initially there for.
Yeah, it's you know, at this point, I've Being in Los Angeles, we've had a similar incident happen right after this with a unarmed African-American male who got shot and killed by the LAPD. There was a protest in Los Angeles on Sunday. And you know what? No arrests, no crime, no damage. They did, you know, the protesters did their thing. The cops respected them. And people moved on. They went about their day. For this to continue going on day after day, night after night, you know, and not to get all too political here, but our president of the United States has decided to stay away as far as he can from this story. With you know, he's said twice now, he's addressed it during his speeches, but he really hasn't really said much about it. And
do you blame him?
Like
he's in a no-win situation with this one.
Yeah, I mean,
like we saw what happened when he came out and talked about the Trayvon Martin incident. Like he of course the when he was the famous line, you know, my Trayvon Martin could have been my son, which I think a lot of us applauded. He got killed for that in a lot of circles.
Yeah. Listen, this is why we voted for him. For situations like this, this is why we need the black president to do it, step up and do black things.
And he said, hey, dog, I'm half white.
Yeah, he did.
He said, hey, man, I only got a couple years left. Yeah. I don't need no problems, brother.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a difficult situation, not only for the president, but for, I think for just talking about it and having this conversation. CNN did a town hall tonight, which I thought was very interesting. But just kind of discussing this with my friends, and a lot of them are Caucasian. I love my Caucasian brothers and sisters, but there's a disconnect, because I think when they, and again, I don't like to use generalities, but I think when a number of my white friends see this on TV, it's a news story. But when my black and brown friends see this, it's a confirmation. It's Trayvon Martin. It's Amadou Diallo. It's Rodney King. It's a narrative that if you're old enough, and even if you're not, you know, I'm 37, even if you're, you know, 10, 15 years younger than me and you're black or brown, this is a reality that you deal with. You know, you might not be persecuted on a daily basis, but you don't have to go too far in the 6 degrees of a separation game to find somebody that you know that has been, you know, in a situation where the color of their skin or the neighborhood that they're in contributed to a problem.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's like, to me, it's a couple things. Like, in a perfect world, police and the people that they are sworn to serve and protect would have a better relationship. In a perfect world, your community leaders would be more representative of who you are. And in a perfect world, you know, the victims in these things would be on better behavior. And again, young people make stupid mistakes. Sometimes I think I sound like an old man, like me and Bill Cosby. And you remember General Larry Platt?
General Larry, no.
The dude that did Pants on the Ground.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like we should just form an old boy band, like Old Direction. And just be like, come on, young brother. Come on, young blood. But, you know, like it takes a conversation. I don't know, like we keep, you know, I've been, like I said, every time an issue like this happens, you get somebody on one of the news shows or one of the talking heads, it's time to start the national conversation. And I don't think that conversation has ever occurred. And truthfully, even if there was a national conversation on race, a national conversation on police brutality, a national conversation on prejudice, I don't think it works until you have a local conversation with your neighbor, with your friends, with people you work with. Because the more that people don't want to talk about it, the more things like this will happen. The more the frustration builds, the more the tension builds, the distrust, the hostility. You know, unless you talk about it, it's not going to get better.
And at least in this instance, if we're talking about race, I think we're talking really about the cops. I mean, this doesn't feel like a black on white, like, you know, you need to look at your friend sideways because you can't trust. Like, I feel like this is really specific to police authority, because this hasn't been the first incident this summer involving the police. We had an incident in New York where a man was choked out and caught on camera and killed as a result of a chokehold with a white officer. We have an incident out here, another incident where a woman was assaulted by a officer caught on camera, and I mean he was sticking her ass like on camera. So this has just sort of been one after another. There was an incident today in St. Louis where this was a little different, but a guy wielding a knife, an African American male who had a knife, who was actually told the cop, you know, shoot me, kill me. The cop shot him and killed him. So this is just miles away from Ferguson. So it's just been a number of incidents involving the police and, unfortunately, African Americans that, you know, at some point, you know, it's gotta stop, and or else, you know. So, I mean, I think we could be facing another, you know, Rodney King situation from, you know, 1982.
Yeah, and then the thing I think we just talk about, like, this doesn't feel as much about race as about the police. I think that changed on, was it last night or the night before? When the first night they started the tear gassing.
It might have been over the weekend.
Okay, yeah. When that happened and you saw the police in riot gear and this overreaction to what at the time was a peaceful protest before the knucklehead started, you know, hijacking the movement. When people saw that and they saw these reporters and everybody else coming out with the tear gas and the people on Fox News, like when Fox News is saying, hey, you're going a little too far, police.
Yeah,
you know that there's a problem.
Yeah, and I think that part of the media coverage has been good in terms of getting cameras out there so people get a sense of what's going on. And, you know, I don't care white, brown, black, yellow, what skin color you have. If you've been watching the coverage and you just see the number of police compared to the number of protesters and the distance between the protesters and the police, usually, it's a good football field distance between the two. And, you know, all of a sudden they decide, okay, it's over, time to go home. And then that's when the trouble starts. So I'm watching currently the coverage on CNN, and it's after 12 o'clock in Ferguson, and cops are lined up again, and protesters are out, and it seems peaceful, but it's just a matter of time before the cops decide to move in. And same situation where we'll get the tear gas and people will get arrested, and we'll do it again tomorrow night.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like a bad horror movie where everything is cool until the sun goes down, and then it turns into the Purge. It's like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah,
like you know, funny story in the midst of all this heavy stuff. I was watching Fox News last night because I've been kind of flipping through all the major news channels to get different perspectives on the coverage, and it was the Shepard Smith show, and Shepard Smith had this guy out there. In the middle of the protests, and this is like right when things went from tense to bad last night, and they you know, the shooting off the tear gas and everything's going crazy, and the people are reporting that they hear gunshots, and so you see the reporter out there, he's like, Shep, my eyes are tearing up, I can't see them, I'm trying to get back to you, and Shep Smith, who is brilliant in this role, he's just like, hey, you be safe out there, Gary, but let us know what's going on out there on the street. What do you see? I'm like, Shep, the man just told you he had tear gas in his eyes. He can't really see right now. But anyway, black dude starts walking up to Gary, the reporter. And I'm like, uh-oh, this can't end well. Black dude in tank top, flip-flops, shorts, and a baseball cap. And he says, hey, man, are you telling the truth? Or are you talking some bullshit? Now, as we all know, news networks have a delay button in case of foul language, but somebody was slow on the trigger, and we heard the beginning part of that. And so then, you know, he's like, Shep, we got a situation. I need to handle this right quick. And Shep's like, all right, Gary, we'll get back to you in a second. And then they go back to Gary about 3 or 4 minutes later.
Bad.
Yes, this is exactly how it felt. Because when they come back, the black dude is no longer irate and angry. Now he's gone from angry protester to black eyewitness man. And there's nobody on television that I hate / love more than black eyewitness man. Because this brother started using words that he couldn't readily identify. And the reporter, Gary's like, so why are you angry, sir? Well, we are angry and upset because of the injustices that have been perpetrated here in Ferguson. And, you know, it's a real bad situation, Gary. And so then Gary's like, well, what happened out there? What did you see before the tear gas started being fired into the crowd? And he's like, well, I was trying to tell everybody to go home, Gary, but they wouldn't listen to me. So what we gonna do, we gonna try to make sure we protect our home. We here for justice. Me and my man Ricky. Ricky walks into the frame, gives him some dap. Me and my man Ricky, we gonna keep the streets safe for the people. And then Gary, not missing a beat, turns back. Well, Shep, Gary and Bobby keeping the streets safe here in Ferguson. Back to you in the studio. And Shep is just like, that is fascinating, Gary. Truly fascinating.
Yeah, Shepard said, I'm glad I'm in New York. I'm glad I'm out on the streets.
Yeah, I'm like, this is, there are those brief moments in great drama and great tragedy that are just so ludicrous that you have to laugh at them. And that, like, it just caught me off guard last night. I was like, am I really watching this on Fox News, no less?
Yeah, or you could watch CNN. Don Lemon's been, he's had some gems.
Oh, Don Lemon, but he's been earning his money this week.
He's going back to, he was in, I don't know if he was DC or New York tonight doing the town hall, but he's going back to Ferguson tomorrow, so we'll get more Don Lemon on the streets of Missouri.
And Nelly was out there because
Jake
Ferguson
was out there. Nelly was out there.
Ferguson's close to St. Louis, and apparently some of the protesters booed Nelly.
Wow.
Which is just funny to me. Like, again, absurdity.
Listen, like they might be protesting, but they're still saying they know what's up.
And like, nigga, that Thanks to My Ex song sucked.
They know it's hot in the streets. They're in the streets. They know. It ain't Nelly.
They're like, Nelly, we want justice for police brutality and from your terrible music. Oh, man. But yeah, real quick, one last thing, like that, just the news cycle, and it becomes almost, the snake eating its own tail?
Yeah.
Where you get the coverage of the coverage of the coverage. Like, one of the cool stories one day turned into, like, a negative story the next day, and that was with, what's the guy, Ron Johnson?
Captain Ron, yeah.
Yeah, the captain they brought in to lead the... I don't know what you call it, the investigation or the, basically to be the public face of the police.
Yeah, he's been the guy doing all the press conferences.
Because somebody in the police department was smart enough to say, okay, the white governor and the white police chief aren't the best people to have out front right now. Let's call Captain Ron.
Yeah, he's actually part of the Highway Patrol. He's not actually an officer in Ferguson.
So they brought Captain Ryan in, and the first day, you heard all these great stories. He was out there talking with the protesters and shaking hands and letting them know their voices will be heard. And then that night, we got more tear gas.
After the night that Captain Ryan said no tear gas would be used. Psych.
And they had this man out, was it 2 o'clock in the morning last night? This is Tuesday night we're recording the show. So 2 o'clock Monday night, Monday morning, Tuesday morning, however you want to say it, 2 a.m. East Coast time. And they started this thing off with a prayer, which I also thought was surreal. It's like they had some Irish Catholic priest doing the prayer, and then Captain Ron got up. And basically, he took like 3 questions, but also, you know, he read a statement. He's like, you know, this violence has got to stop. And he said, if people could protest all they want during the day, but it'd probably be best to go home when the sun goes down. And one of the reporters is like, so are you telling people they can't protest all day and all night? He's like, well, they can protest with as long as they want to, but I'm just saying it would probably be better if you went home when the sun went down.
Read between the lines. He's trying to help you out, dog. He's trying to tell y'all, we will arrest you.
Yeah, when the sun goes down. Arrest you.
Without saying it directly.
Yeah, it was like 2 days ago, people were saying this dude should run for mayor of Missouri. He was that loved. It got real in a hurry.
Yeah. It's
it got real quick, fast, in a hurry for Captain Ron.
As I'm watching now, the cops are moving in to arrest more people, more protesters.
Yep, Yeah, you can see this starting to push and shove now. Yeah. It's like, I understand the cause, and I definitely respect the peaceful protesters. But at a point, you got to realize the knucklehead. Like, I don't know if there has to be some self-policing within the protests. Like, these idiots, like, that are coming in and just taking the focus off of what you're there for. Or maybe it's just that all the quote-unquote real protesters did go home early, and all we got left are the knuckleheads that want to get on TV.
Yeah, I mean, that might be the case. But just, you know, there's that many times where I ask myself this question, but where's Al Sharpton? Where's Jesse Jackson? Mm. Like, you know, where are those people who can come in and sort of fuse the situation? If Obama isn't going to, you know, get involved, then
Don Lemon asked that tonight. He's like, where are the new black leaders? Which is a question we've been asking for like 20 years.
He's at a point. He's at a point. Unfortunately, he's at a point.
Like, what's that old Chris Rock joke? He's like, we need a new black leader, and I nominate Coach Pat Riley. he led more men to the mountaintop than anybody I can think of. Yeah, he's like, we might not win a championship, but we can get to the playoffs, and that's all we want.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I saw Al Sharpton tonight. He gave a statement, but he was in some church, like 50 miles away from the actual incident in Ferguson. If you are, quote-unquote, the black leader, this is where you're supposed to be earning your money, earning your, you know, your cachet. Like, Jesse ain't out there. Al's not out there. Like, who else? Like, what, like, you know, I want the educated black, quote-unquote, the Cornell West.
Michael Dyson. And,
yes, yeah. Where are these dudes at? You know, it's one thing to write books or go on these shows and speak about things. And, you know, like Michael Eric Dyson was on First Take the other day and had some really good points. But there's one thing to be said from, you know, speaking from afar. And there's one thing to be in the midst of the hurt and the midst of the anger. And also, you know, being a leader and stepping up. And they have a position like Barack Obama, as much as I would love to see him do that, he can't do that as the president of the United States. He's in a no-win situation, but somebody like a Cornel West or Michael Eric Dyson or I don't know who's a younger black leader that people would or black voice that people would listen to. Alfred Kunawa, why don't they get out there and
there's a Twitter for Alfred Kunawa. I was trying to figure out how we work this in.
You're like, y'all stop fighting. Let's all get drunk and hop behind the bar and talk to some white women. Problem solved. And racism solved. Thank you, Big Nasty.
Yeah.
it's a crazy situation. You know, I just hope that cooler heads prevail, because whenever you get crowds and police mixed up, it can end very badly, very quickly.
And weapons and...
Yeah. Like, what's the old... you see Men in Black, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite lines from Men in Black is when, at the beginning, when Will Smith is like, why don't you just tell people about, you know, aliens, because mm-hmm. people are smart, people are rational. And Tommy Lee Jones is like, a person is smart, a person is rational, but people, once they get into that mob mentality or that crowd think mentality, people can be very susceptible and led, you know, down a dark path. And I think all it takes is one or two knuckleheads, and you see what we've seen for the last couple nights.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's up to the parents of Michael Brown to say something.
Yeah, really. Yeah, I was gonna say, really, they are probably much like Trayvon's parents
were the ones who really took this. I mean, they sort of made sure that, you know, while they're upset at everything that happened, they made sure that everything they stood their ground in terms of how they thought. But there's never a situation in what city was that, Orlando? The shooting happened.
Trayvon Martin was in Sanford.
Sanford, yeah. There was never a situation in Sanford where it got like this. And I think I mean, his parents were actually, they came to NABJ twice. The summer after the shooting and then after the Zimmerman trial, they came back. So they were always present and sort of, you know, went around and made sure to, you know, say what they had to say. And I've seen Michael Brown's parents on television, but I haven't heard them say anything about, like, hey, cut it out. Like, we understand you guys want to protest, but you guys are just doing more harm to the city than good,
like,
at this point.
Like, when you think about it, how crazy is that? That when we need voices, it often turns to the victim or the people that have been hurt. Like, Rodney King, can't we all just get along? Yeah. He was the one that had to make the plea for peace. Trayvon Martin's parents, they had to make the plea for peace. Like, ultimately, the only people that may be able to cut through this nonsense is Michael Brown's parents. Yeah. Like, that's just a weird situation where the people that should be hurting and grieving the most have to be leaders for other people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's hopefully by next week's show, we're not still discussing day 17 of this, but at this rate, we might be.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have to hopefully, you know, if you're a praying person out there, pray for everybody out there in Ferguson, and you know, hopefully cooler heads can prevail, and you know, this whole thing with the police and with minorities is not something that gets swept under the rug once the cameras leave Ferguson, and it's something that, you know, we talk about, we discuss, and you know, we keep our elected officials feet to the fire on this, because it's a real problem out there for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So that was the Kings of social commentary this week.
Social injustice.
The Kings of social injustice. Oh, real quick, I do want to plug another podcast that I don't normally do this, but when I do find one that is excellent, I will do it from time to time. There's a show out there that I've just kind of discovered recently, and I hate it because I had an idea that was similar and I never jumped on it,
mm-hmm.
but I love it because they've done it so well. It's two comedians, Sherrod Small and I think Kurt Metzger is the other guy's name, and they got a show called Race War. And basically it's a white guy and a black guy, both of them comedians, and they will have different guests on. You know, one week it might be a gay guy or an Arab person or a Native American, and they're all comedians, and they just kind of talk about the kind of preposterousness of race.
Hmm.
And it's a good show. It's a funny show. It's sometimes it even gets really deep and insightful, but I think a lot of times it's just good to hear that conversation. Like, one of the funny things they do just off the top of every show, because they're like, you know, it's, we're not going to beat around the bush. Like, we're going to get real, but we're also going to have fun with it. Sherrod Small performs a ceremony to give a guy, Kurt, the power to say nigger. And, like, he they play, you know, you remember the old He-Man theme song?
Yeah.
They play the theme song, and it's like, nigger. And then he's like, Sherrod's like, you have the power to say nigger. And then he's like, but only in the confines of this particular podcast.
What's the name of the show again?
Race Wars.
Okay.
Race Wars. You can find it on iTunes and Stitcher. It's a very funny show, but yeah, I had an idea in my head that I was going to come out with a show called Race Baiters, but, you know, like, I hate when you have an idea and somebody does it, but at least they did it. Like, they did it better than I would have done it. So I'm like, okay, I'll listen. I'm a fan now. But I've listened to, I discovered it probably Sunday or Monday, and I've listened to about three or four shows. They're about an hour and some change each. Not a long time commitment, but it's funny. I recommend it.
Yeah, I'll check this out.
So yeah, that is a Race Wars. That's the only Race War I approve of. You go out on that limb.
There you go.
Oh man. So for all of you listening, we will get back hopefully to the business of sports next week. We'll probably do our NFL preview maybe, because we're coming up on our fantasy draft.
Yes, let's discuss this fantasy draft that I haven't joined yet, because...
Yes, you need to join, Marcus.
Well, you need to change the rules.
There have been some rule changes. You can check out the rule changes there. I have
to join to check out the rule changes, but all right, we'll see.
Hey, at least it won't cost you $9.99 to join.
That's true.
So, yeah, Marcus, you just need to join the league, and, you know, everything will be all right with the world.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Or should I say all light with the world?
Do we invite Alfred back in?
Ooh, that is a big question.
Will Alfred respond to us?
Will he respond? That is the bigger question.
Because we haven't heard from Alfred since.
Yeah, we really haven't.
We really haven't.
I think he's liked a couple of my tweets.
Yeah, but I haven't heard
from
him.
That's about it. Yeah. I've seen him do the ice bucket challenge, though.
He did that?
That popped up in my feed.
By the way, thanks to all my friends who have not tagged me in that foolishness. No offense to ALS, you know, but this has jumped a shark in terms of what's going on here.
When Vince McMahon does it and challenges Kermit the Damn Frog, it's jumped a shark.
It's just, come on. This is like the new, what was it, the Harlem Shake?
Oh, yeah. Everybody had a Harlem Shake.
Yeah.
Who did I see today? I saw, I will tell you what, the Wei Ting, a friend of the program, posted a link today on Facebook of Ice Bucket Challenge fails.
Yeah, that was good.
That is hilarious.
I could watch that, yeah, but, you know.
If you challenge me, I'm going to do something like KME, Chris from L.A., he did the ice bucket challenge, and he just drank a glass of ice water. I would do something trollish like that.
Yeah, but don't tag me.
And send in my $10. It's a brilliant damn marketing campaign, though.
Yeah, it's raised a lot of money, $15 million.
Yeah. That's what happens when you prey on people's hubris. Because everybody likes to get on camera and be the center of attention, even if it's only for like a minute.
And everyone likes to point out famous friends they have or people they know. It's all just self-involved. And, hey, look at me. Just stop it. Just donate money.
Charlie Sheen had one of the best ones.
With the money came out. Yeah. That was good.
And I love that he challenges the dudes from 3 and a Half Men. Like, that's the ultimate dick move. Like, I enjoyed that one. He's like, I challenge John Cryer, Ashton Kutcher, and Chuck Lorre from 2 and a Half Men.
Yeah, Chuck ain't doing it.
Like, that's, for all you want to say about Charlie Sheen, that was the perfect blend of charity and just being a dick. So that's going to do it for this week. Marcus, where can the people send you angry tweets or angry messages? Because we talked about pretty much everything other than sports for the last 40 minutes of the show.
Send that to Marco Will, MarcoWill.
And you can follow me at N8, MozaiK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. You can holler at both of us at CosPod, KOS_POD, CosPod on Twitter. Join the Facebook page. We're getting new members all the time. And, you know, come to Facebook.com/ The Kings of Sport. If you like the show, rate and review us on iTunes and Stitcher. Share the show with your friends. You know, we talk about racial harmony and bringing people together. This is probably a good step towards bringing people together. Kings of Sport.
Considering we're two black guys, I'm gonna say maybe not, but sure. If you say so.
Or if you're a white listener out there that wants to,
well, we have white guests. We're good. We're cool.
Yeah, we have white guests. If you want to hear about black culture, but you don't want to actually talk to any black people,
then we're your people.
Download the Kings of Sport.
There you go.
We're two of the good ones. That should be our a new tagline.
And I did hair, in parentheses.
The Kings of Sport. Only one of us would have been in the field.
Yeah, what else would be in the house, boy?
Oh, it's got all racial up in this piece.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you have a show like this. So that's going to do it for this week. Again, next week we'll be back talking about the NFL, I'm sure. Because I'm finally starting to get into NFL mode.
Actually, let's say that for the following week. We can do college football next week because that starts first.
Oh, yeah. I totally forgot about college
that
football.
That starts next Thursday.
I completely forgot about college football.
Yeah.
And the debacle that was Ask Jamarcus. Not Jamarcus. Jameis.
Jameis. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
James Winston.
Only reason I said Jamarcus Russell because I just watched that new Dish commercial.
Mm-hmm.
with you know how they got the one with Heath Shuler
and Matt Leinart. Yeah.
Matt Leinart and Bosworth in the diner. They got a new one where they're at a barbecue and Jamarcus Russell comes out.
Of course he's at a barbecue. Well, of course.
He's like, I love college, baby. Yeah. I bet you did. And his shirt was appropriately enough purple.
Oh boy.
Just like his favorite.
Well, his stool colors.
And the colors in his cup.
Yeah.
Like that purple drink. Shout out to Jamarcus Russell. Greatest Oakland Raider quarterback of the past 5 years.
Nah, yeah, Carson Palmer.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, I was going to say Oakland, and up until Carson, slim pickings. But yeah, let's get out of here. I was trying to think of the endings are always tough.
Yeah, plug your stuff. You didn't plug your. Did you plug your Twitter?
Yeah, I plugged Twitter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's add her.
Oh, yeah, so we're tired. Full disclosure, it's like 1 in the morning out here.
Almost 2, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, we're tired. So we're going to close up shop for another week, and we'll be back next week with a regular show with segment 4 and all that good stuff, hopefully. But until then, for Marcus Vanderberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton. Increase the peace. And you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, thanks, thanks.
Sharp as a tank, like I just left. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, placetobenation.com.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show, every week, here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
On Return the Mailman, we talk about life with great enthusiasm, which eventually leads to disillusionment and inevitably hopelessness. But don't worry, there's lots of laughs along the way. So check us out every week or month or whatever on Richard and the Mailman.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith's blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.